Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome here. I'm kind of sort of humbled to see so many people in the class, and it almost is a bit fearful, actually, because I look around and see people that are a lot older than I am and probably have this figured out a whole lot more than I do. The title of today's discussion is We Need to Talk. How many of you have ever said that to someone? Okay. I came across this in my preparation. It said, as just kind of a starter to a topic, he said, start with a joke to break the ice. In my case, it's to break the tension. So I don't feel a lot of tension here, but I want this to be a jolly class and an interactive class. And I have some things to share, and then we'll talk about them a little more later. Just a joke or two to get us on the communication thing. I got fired from my work today. My boss said my communication skills were rather awful. I didn't know what to say to that. If you ever find yourself locked out of a house, talk to it really calmly. It's the key to communication. I'm getting in the stage of like, we have two children, and I've recently kind of been impressed with dad jokes. If you're not, I'm sorry. So I just love puns and things like that. The title suggests several scenarios why we would need to talk. Could be that two friends haven't seen each other for a while and they meet up. I did that this week. Met up with some friends I haven't seen, and I said, hey, we need to talk. And we did, and it was great. It could be a scenario where two people meet for the first time and they find a common connection, and you just really connect that. Hey, we need to talk some more. Right now, so maybe this will create some conversation, but my favorite sport is, Dennis, you probably know, disc golf right now. It's kind of he's my co-teacher, by the way. That's kind of my main interest that I take a lot of time doing. Anybody else play disc golf in here? Only one. Oh, my. Anyway, we need to talk. So maybe that's why you need to talk. You find some common ground, and you need to talk about it. Just recently, I met up with a fellow who I've seen around but didn't really know him, and we met up at a wedding, and we're singing together. And at the very end of the wedding, I found out that he's a disc golfer, and unfortunately, we didn't have time to play, but we did say, hey, we need to get together, not talk, but play disc golf. Or it could be that some decisions have to be made. Maybe you're in a tough spot and you say, we need to talk about that and you need to make a decision. Or maybe there's an issue that arises between two parties, and I guess that's what I was referring to, and you have a hard discussion to have. I just said this recently. I thought about it in preparation of this. My wife and I and children are planning on a week's vacation next week, which is partly why they're not here. And I told her that one day, I said, hey, we need to talk about that. Like, where are we going? Because we're kind of procrastinators, or at least I am. And I just said, hey, we need to talk about that. So maybe there's something like that. A list of books and resources your teachers. I always enjoy when people say, hey, this is where I got information from. So if you want some resource lists, get your pens ready. By the way, I'm a terrible book reader. I start a book and get about halfway through. Slip your name. I thought about myself when you walked up with a whole stack of books yesterday and there was little markers partway through them all. I was like, that's what my book stack looks like. I get about halfway through and then I stop. So I have a bunch of books I didn't get the whole way through, but I got partway through. One of them was Surrounded by Idiots by Thomas Erickson. I bought it just because I liked the title. It actually has a lot of good stuff. It talks a lot about the four personality traits. Are you red? Are you green? Are you blue? Are you pink? Oh, no, not purple. Sorry. The Essential Conversation, I forgot to write down who the author of that is, but it is geared toward teachers and boards and things like that. Reclaiming Conversation by Sherry Turkle. That's a really good read. I didn't get the whole way through that one either. The Science of Effective Communication, I use some from there. Good old Russian name. Tuhovsky, I think you say it. Tuhovsky, Tuhovsky. Anyway, good read. The Science of Effective Communication. And last but not least, Jordan Peterson's book, 12 Rules for Life. How many are familiar with that book? Okay, you should get it if you haven't. That's a A very good book. So those were some sources I used in preparation for the talk. And I kind of tailored this thing to maybe, I guess you could say, weak points in my own communication skills. And I thought it was interesting. The more I worked on this topic, we need to talk, we need to talk, we need to talk, is actually, we need to listen. We need to listen. So I plan to spend a large part of this topic on we need to listen. First of all, if you have your Bibles, I wasn't sure how many people have their Bibles, but I would like to turn to 1 Peter chapter 3 and draw just a few things from the scriptures. 1 Peter chapter 3, and I was just amazed at how much the Bible talks about communication if we allow it to actually speak to us. 1 Peter chapter 3, and I'm going to focus mainly on verses 8 to 12. Verse 8, finally, be all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. I'd like to talk just briefly, basic principles of communication in this chapter. He says, eschew evil. Eschew has the idea of turn or run from. Actually walk away from. And I was thinking about how could we do that in communication. Turn away from, literally in our walk. Well, not exactly, but I came across this, that words account for 7%. Of a conversation, the tone of your voice for 38%, and your body language for 55%. You can read different percentages, I think, but it's in that range. So our walk, how do we handle ourselves in a conversation? I'm sure we all have been in conversations where and people have really bad body language, and they're trying to say something. It's like, I have no idea what you're saying because your body's telling me something else. I think Steve and John and I were talking about body language and the folding of the hands. It's like, ha, you ain't got to say anything more to me. So if I see anybody folding their hand. So think about that. I think it's something in our walk, in our gestures. How do we come across? He says, do good, seek peace and ensue it. In other words, how hard are we seeking after peaceful relationships and communication in our in life? I came across this story, and this is a story about how a little boy actually ensued peace, or his mom sent him on a journey. He was a Boy Scout. His mom, was going to Boy Scout, and his mom said, "I will not take you to the zoo until you forgive Billy for stealing your candy bar." And he said, "Well, Mom, I tried to talk to him, and he doesn't want to listen to me." She said, "You go talk to him and make him listen to you, and you say you're sorry. Or you forgive him for that." Okay, so he goes running out the door, and he chased Billy down, and he knocked him on the ground, and he sat on him, and he said, "Billy, I forgive you for stealing my candy bar, but I'd sure find it easier if you were to wipe the chocolate off your mouth." And I thought about that in relationships. Sometimes maybe we just need to be a little more persistent in that, and don't just think, well, time will heal it. No, we should go after that thing. And talk to that person about it and make sure that it's cleared up. The easiest thing is just say, time will heal. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of intentionality. It's humbling to admit we're wrong. From verse 8, I'd like to take five behaviors that help us in our relationship. Verse 8, the first one is, finally, be all of one mind, having compassion. Sorry, no, I'm going to stop there. Be all of one mind, harmonious, same mind. What does that mean? We all think alike? How many of us in this room all think the same? Okay. We don't, but you do. No, we just don't. And I was thinking about this more recently, like in relation to unity. Unity is not when we all think the same. Unity is when we take different ideas and we learn to blend and see it from other people's point of view, and we work with it. That's unity. So I think that's what he's talking about here. Be of the same mind. Care for one another. All have sort of the common goal of we're going to work this thing out together. Sympathetic. Have compassion. Jesus says, "We have not an high priest that cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities." Jesus was someone who was very sympathetic. We need to have compassion to those that we come in contact with. And I felt like after this morning's talk in the auditorium that I'm not sure why I'm having this, but there was so much good relationship stuff there. So I'm sorry if we're being wordy here. Another thing he talks about in here is he says love as brethren. Brotherly love, if you look up the root of this, is phila adelphos, I think is what it is, which is actually brotherly love. To actually, how do brothers love? Guys, come on, how do brothers love? Let's think about this a little bit. Yeah, I have brothers, probably. I know how me and my brothers love. One way. Really? Go ahead.
Wrestling.
Yeah. You wrestle, all right. Yeah, you have a good time together. Me and my brothers are really blunt with each other. We say things exactly how they are sometimes. And you know what? Guess what? That's not all bad. But it has to be, it has to have some checkpoints. And we heard some of that this morning. But also I thought about brotherly love is, brothers will often, sometimes we say, defend to the end. My teacher was come from a family of a bunch of boys, and they fought a lot because he used to tell stories about that. But I never, ever wanted to go to their house and play chess with them because he said they would band together and just, they would all band as one unit and play against the visitor that came to their house. I thought, that's terrible me. And so I never wanted to play chess with them, but there you go. That's an example of brotherly love. You're with people to the end. And that has to be in our relationships. We're willing to stick with it. Pitiful, talks about that in this verse, has the idea of a sense of duty, loyalism or patriotism, and last of all, courteous. What's Ephesians 4:32 say?
Be kind.
All together? Be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, hath forgiven you. All right, I'd like to move into maybe a little more of the practicality. Actually, no, I'm not quite done with that. Lips, talks about that here in verse 10. For he that will love life and see good, is he, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips, that they speak no guile. Guile has the idea of to turn or bend. How often do we twist or bend facts just to put us in a better light? Should never happen. But don't skew the facts to gain the upper hand in a relationship, in communication. Don't spread untruth about the other individual. It destroys trust. Ephesians 4:29 says, let no unwholesome word proceed out of your mouth. If we actually do that, if we would actually do that, we wouldn't need any counselors anymore, right? In our world, if we would actually do that, let no unwholesome word proceed out of your mouth. What's the reward of this kind of communication? I love verses 9 and verse 12. Verse 9 says at the end, knowing that thereunto you're called, that you should inherit a blessing. Most of us enjoy blessing things from other people, and there's a blessing. In verse 12, it says, for the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, but his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. How many of us want God to hear our prayers? I think we all do, right? Well, let's have good relationships. Let's have good communication, because there is definitely a connection between that and God hearing our prayers. All right, I'd like to talk next about maybe how to have hard conversations, which is not necessarily, this is by no means a exhaustive list, but hard conversations are things we tend to shy away from. We don't want to do them. Point number one I have is make sure there's money in the bank. And I'm not talking how many thousand you have in your savings account. I think y'all know what I mean by that. In other words, you should have built a level of communication with that person before you have to go tackle that hard conversation. And if you didn't, you maybe should just put it off. Because you're going to get nowhere if you have not actually had good communication in the past. So make sure there's money in the bank before you go there. Another thing is push past the fear. We all are faced with fear. I thought about this. This is a really almost embarrassing story. I thought this last night. I was staying at Sam Krupp's place, and I used to think about this as a little guy. But how many have ever rushed up a stairs and you could hear the person behind you? They were coming after you. How many have ever? Okay, you don't do that anymore, I'm pretty sure. Or do you actually? I just did the other day. It was like a strange house, and I'm like racing up these stairs. Like, man, this sounds forever. Like someone's coming after me. Anyway, another thing, we face fear. When I was a little fella, we had a two-story house, and and the shower and bathroom, everything was up there. Every time Mom would send me up to take a bath, there was a window in that bathroom, and it's the second story. Nobody's going to be there, right? But I could always see this giant ape sitting at the window just staring in at me. And I used to be scared of gorillas and monkeys and things like that. And it was a fear thing. And anyway, my point on that is you have to push past fear. That's probably not what you're afraid of in talking to someone. They're probably not gorillas or monkeys, but maybe they are. John Maxwell says, everything worthwhile is uphill. Everything worthwhile is uphill. another thing I remember, a fearful thing I used to have at home was we had a small chicken house, just, I don't know, 40 or 50 chickens, and part of our job as boys was to take care of the animals, and well, if you were a little lazy, you didn't always do them right, you know, you wanted to hurry and get done so you could do something else, so sometimes we would occasionally finish, you know, just not give them water. I mean, there was that much in the container anyway, so they got enough water at night, I mean, we'd get it in the morning. Well, Dad would always come home from work, and he would check that kind of stuff to make sure we did our jobs right, and it was not uncommon to have to go out after dark and fill the chicken water, all right? Ah, extremely fearful. Just be extremely fearful of that, because there is literally boogeymen behind every bush. Literally, like they were there, I could see them. Like, I mean, I could picture them, all these boogies pasted together. Anyway, push past the fear, everything worthwhile is uphill. Another thing with hard conversations is begin with the end in mind. And what I mean by that is, what do I want to accomplish? What is my goal in this conversation? What do I want to accomplish? Sometimes we think we might know what we want to accomplish, but maybe it turns out we actually don't, because in the middle of the conversation, we end up starting to be critical and start pointing fingers and pointing out other things the person's doing wrong, which have nothing to do with this exact conversation we're having. And so, no, we have to go. What is my goal? What do I want to accomplish? And I think if we get off track on that, we need to maybe just stop the conversation. Another point is be clear about the issue. Be very clear why you came. Here, this is what I'm here to talk about. And don't get off in the weeds. The saying is, to be unclear is to be unkind. To be unclear is to be unkind. Because you're not actually saying what you're really here for. Some of us just love this kind of a freeway, you know, say exactly what you mean. I like that kind of permission because, yeah, I can just lay right in on that person. Well, we need, like we heard this morning, temperance that Mervyn talked about. Another thing about hard conversation is ask questions rather than make statements. Ask questions rather than make statements. What that does is questions convict. I had this just recently. I was talking with someone and it was not even really a hard conversation. But they started asking questions about whatever we're talking about, and I just kind of started emptying things out, and it was interesting. Questions convict, and statements will condemn. And so let's learn to ask questions and almost play dumb, maybe. It was actually a short talk I listened to about this fellow. He works with a lot of big businessmen, but he says there's value in playing the stupid guy. And he was in a conversation with some money financial project, and this lecturer was standing up talking about all these big terms and laying everything out, and he had no idea what this guy was talking about, but all these other fellows around the table were going, and he's like, I'm sorry, but I have no idea what you just said. And so the guy started explaining, and it turns out the rest of the guys around the table had no idea what he was saying either, but they were too proud to say that. So sometimes there's value in playing the stupid guy, or maybe better, asking questions. Like, I don't know a lot about this. Tell me more about it. So anyway, that's all I have to say on asking questions. Beware of different perspectives. We all have different perspectives, right? I was looking for, but I could not find in my desk drawer because I'm not that organized of a teacher, but it's basically a picture, and I can't really draw it here exactly just because I'm, anyway. But it has to do with perspective. You look at it, and some people see two faces, and some people see a vase. Maybe you all have seen that thing. And I use that for school devotion sometimes. For example, my perspective here is a lot different than your perspective where you're sitting. I wish you could be here and see how bored you look right now. Just kidding. Perspective is everything in a conversation. We have different backgrounds. We have different things that brought us to where we are, different cultures. And so beware of that. Approach like you want to learn. I'm here to learn something about this. Another point is the other person doesn't have to agree with you when you're done. We get this block thing that the conversation is not finished until everybody is thinking the same about this. No, you don't all have to agree. You don't all have to agree when the conversation's over. And last point is take care of yourself. In a hard conversation, you need to take care of yourself. That sounds really selfish, maybe. But my point with that is if you can't handle it anymore, then just bring the talk to a close. Say, hey, we'll pick up. We're going to have to pick up another time because I'm emotionally not set up to handle this right now. And we have to be honest with that. And that's not being selfish, because that's not only fair to you, it's also fair for them, because here's what's going to happen, at least for me sometimes, is I just get irritable and I just start then becoming critical. And so it's not really selfish. You're actually doing it for the betterment of someone else. All right. I'd like to talk about listening next, if we could. And notes are kind of in a jumble here. Some of these thoughts I took from William Ory. He has a TED talk on this. How many of you listen to TED talks? Okay, a few of you. You should if you can get a chance. But I just really thrive on listening to a good TED talk. Winnie the Pooh's philosophy is on listening is if the person you're talking to doesn't appear to be listening, be patient. It may simply be that he has a piece of fluff in his ear. You've heard that. Anyway, that's Winnie Pooh's philosophy on listening. I would say we should move past that a little bit more than. Yeah, anyway. If you lived in the 1800s, in the early 1900s, you would have, and you went to a counselor or a psychiatrist, you probably would have walked in a room that had sort of a long bench. What they called, see if I can get it right, a psychoanalytic bench is what they called it. And then behind that, so here was the bench, and then over here was a chair. So there's two chairs, and there was a psychoanalytic bench, which is where you would sit and kind of recline, and then the psychiatrist or person would sit on the other chair and look away. There was no face-to-face conversation. And basically the psychiatrist, what he would do is basically just kind of create this blank sheet of paper feel in the room. And you would just start to pour out all your troubles. And anyway, I felt that kind of interesting. And it wasn't until years later that they saw that this isn't actually a good idea. We need some more face-to-face conversation. And here's something for you to think about. You might have heard this before. It's kind of an age-old thing. If a tree falls in the woods, anybody familiar with this? Okay. If a tree falls in the woods and no one hears it, does it make a sound? And we're not here to answer that necessarily, because people have argued about that for years. But does it make a sound? Here, think about this. If someone talks and nobody listens, has communication actually happened? Maybe that's the better question to ask. If someone talks and no one listens, has communication actually happened? I'm here to suggest that listening is maybe the missing half of communication. Most of us are good talkers, at least as teachers we think we are anyway. Notice I said we think we are. There's a lot of talking in our world, but not a lot of listening. We think that communication is about talking, but really it's maybe more about listening. And I'm focusing on this because I'm a terrible listener. I just am. And part of why I cringe about having this topic is I know how terrible of a listener I am at home at times with my wife and family. Actually, I just thought I would share this. My wife may not like this, but I text her just for the topic. I said, hey, I have my relationship topic come up. If you think about it, just think about me. I said, I'm really nervous, and I'm not sure if I'm going to get through this. And she's like, not sure why you wouldn't. You always have things to say other times. My wife doesn't talk a lot, but when she does, it's pretty good. So, listening is why I chose to spend the rest of this time thinking about listening. God gave us how many ears? How many ears did he give us?
Two.
Are you sure? You act like you're not sure about that. How many ears did he give you?
Two.
Two, okay. Just maybe just like, two, maybe three. What are these for? Okay. Two ears and how many mouths?
One
mouth. That's right. There's a reason God did that. And I think we forget that. Two ears and one mouth is the reason God did that. In Jordan Peterson's book on 12 Rules of Life, there's one rule that I want to quote here, and he says, assume that the person you're listening to might know something you don't. He was a psychiatrist that listened to a lot of people. And he says that listening is just simply to pay attention and listen. And he says that he, in his book, he says he's learned a lot of things from some pretty dumb people. But he did that by listening. He learned a lot of valuable lessons. So, listen. God gave us this advice way back in the book of James. He said, let every man be swift to hear and slow to speak. So that's really not a Jordan Peterson thing. It's a Bible thing to listen. While listening, here's what happens. While listening, people may actually tell you what's wrong with them. You can read that in his book. They'll actually tell you what's wrong with them. And I've had this experience. I don't think they were experimenting, but it's happened to me already. Just by someone listening, I can dump a lot of stuff fast. Right, Dennis? You weren't listening. Oh, my. Anyway, and people will a lot of times often reach a solution on their own if we're willing to listen. They will talk it out. It's like, hey, yeah, there it is. Listening gives the other person time to think, is what it does. Gives the other person time to think. By you just, it's fine to have quiet pauses in communication. It's fine. Because that means people are thinking, hopefully. What that means is you've made the environment comfortable enough that they're willing to just kind of share what's on their ideas and maybe through that find a solution. And I had that experience recently. I was speaking with our pastor about some just church stuff and things that I struggle with sometimes. And it was funny. He didn't really say much at all. Until we were done, I was like, I knew exactly what I needed to do. And he didn't really say anything. And it was just, I was, of course, thinking about that in relation to this topic. It's like, that was pretty cool. Like, that actually works. Like, just listen and they'll kind of get an answer themselves. Carl Rogers says, listening must be done properly. And he says one way to do that is talk only. Talk only after you have restated the other person's idea. Okay? You're not ready to talk until you have restated the other person's idea. And he says that actually can be scary. He said that can be very scary because what happens is you may actually start to see the situation their way and be changed. And that would be terrible. That would be terrible, wouldn't it? If you didn't agree with someone and then you actually like start thinking like them, I mean, that could be bad. Anyway, that's Carl Rogers' advice. Jordan Peterson says, avoid the dominance hierarchy. If you're familiar with him, that's very much his terms. And that is where you simply don't listen at all, but you're, while the other person's talking, you're thinking of the next thing to say. And I've been challenging myself with that this weekend. I don't know if you talked to me, I don't know if you thought about it. Probably not because I didn't watch it, but like so many times I want to get my what I think in there. I have to. No, that's not good communication. Proverbs 18:13 says, he that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is folly and shame unto him. So, really kind of a shameful thing. All right, why listen? Why should we listen? Why should we do this? Number one, I have three reasons here. It helps us to understand. And what I mean by that, it helps us to know where the individual is that's talking to us. Number two, it helps us connect. It builds rapport and builds trust, and it shows that we actually care. And number three, it helps us get to yes sooner. In other words, it helps us get to an answer sooner. By listening, we can sooner reach the answer. So it helps us to understand, it helps us to connect, and it helps us to get to yes. It costs us nothing to listen. Do you ever think about that? It costs us nothing to listen. It's the golden key in relationships, they say. How do you listen? How to listen? Hearing words. Sometimes when we listen, we hear the words and we try and quickly see, how do I fit into this? It's kind of what we were talking about before. Where do I agree? Where do I disagree? Well, no, we shouldn't be going there. That's the wrong way to think. That's because the focus is on us and not on what the other individual is saying. Genuine listening is the spotlight is on the other person. You tune into their wavelengths. You tune into their what they're going through. Put yourself in their shoes, you might say. When someone's talking, we should listen to what's not what's being said, but what's actually not being said. Okay, I've had that happen already. Someone's there talking to you, and it's like, there's more going on than just what they're saying. Okay. So listen, try and listen for that. What are they actually saying? There's probably a lot of things under there. Listen to what's behind the words and what's behind the needs and the emotions. If listening is so useful, if it's such a great thing, then why aren't more of us doing it? I don't know. Because it's hard. It's hard to listen. But we have so much noise in our head. We have so many things going on. My suggestion is if we want to listen properly, we actually have to listen to ourselves. Mervyn talked about that, speaking the truth in our hearts. Well, I think we also have to listen to ourselves. This William Ulrey that I was saying gave this TED Talk, he had done a lot of interviews with pretty notable government leaders across the world, and he would go there sometimes and just listen to. And he helped solve many civil wars and strife and things in many countries just simply by listening. And before he would do that, before he went into a session, you always take time to just stop and listen to himself. What is going on in my life that could interrupt or interfere with this communication session that I'm about to have? And just to listen. And I was thinking, how does that look for us as Christian people? You have any suggestions on how that might look? Just to take a moment? I thought about prayer. Before we go into conversation, we should spend some time in prayer. That's really listening to ourselves. What's really in my heart? take care of any stress that might be in your life and remove any anxiety. And just take a moment of silence. If we listen more, what difference would it make? Maybe we need a listening revolution. Maybe we need a listening revolution where every child learns to listen. Maybe we should teach it as a curriculum in school. We teach reading. Well, isn't listening reading other people? Isn't that what it is? Maybe we should. Is there any curriculums out there? Does anybody know? Is there I was going to do some research and I didn't. Is there actually listening curriculums? I don't know. I think it'd be an interesting thing because isn't it as important as reading almost? I don't know. Just an idea. and what's a better way to show our love than to just listen to someone? Imagine a world where leaders actually listen to one another. Imagine how much strife would have been dissipated if leaders and people in authority would have actually listened to each other. And what if we had listening shows instead of talk shows? Maybe that would be a good thing. Should we have one right now? I guess we are having one, maybe. Well, not for me, actually. All right. What if we had peace listens instead of peace talks? Maybe that would be valuable. Wouldn't a lot of conflict be eliminated? Wouldn't a lot of struggles be eliminated if we just simply listened? And this is almost sounding repetitive up here. Like I just keep talking about this listening thing. Listening can be contagious, all right? By us listening, the other person will listen to us, and it is a contagious thing. So my last point is the best gift that you can give to someone else is listen. That's the best gift you can give to someone else in communication. All right, that's all I have for today. Any questions or comments or things you want to discuss further? Because I want to have some time to listen to what you have to say. We have, it's like 11 minutes yet. Sorry, I know some of that's pretty hefty stuff, and some of you look really, really bored, and I apologize. No, I don't apologize for it at all, actually. Any questions or comments? I could have went a lot of ways with this talk, and I just didn't know where to go, but I decided, look, I'm going to pick what I need to hear. It's interesting, I'm here talking to you, but what I need to learn through this. I don't need lessons on how to talk. I'm thinking of how to do that. You have a question? No? Okay. Really?
Someone came to me less than a year ago. He said we need to talk. Mm. And obviously that wasn't going to be the time and place for it to happen. And I stewed for...
What kind of soup did you have?
and tried to think of all the different scenarios or how what we're going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. And it ended up... Not where I thought we were. So when you need to say we need to talk, give us a clue what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
I was wondering too about that. Why is it always negative?
Yeah.
When I said, hey, we need to go talk, I was like, oh, good, I love talking with you.
I thought about that.
Even though I do, I don't care who would say that, I'd still wonder.
Well, and
maybe you have to be more positive.
Yeah. Well, I said if you don't want to talk about disc golf, we can. Like, that's positive.
Yeah.
Like,
but you also told us.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. Why is we need to talk? Why is that kind of like, I hated that as a little guy. Hey, I need to talk to you. So where I went to school when I was a little chap is we used to get these, they called them conduct informers. And if you did something wrong at school, the teacher filled them out, and then she folded a nice trifold. I remember that. It was trifolded in a nice, big, long envelope. I think they got the biggest one they could find just so it looked bad when you were carrying it. Anyway, if you did something wrong, fill out a report, stuck it in the envelope, and you had to take it home and put it on your dad's desk. Whew, I always went to my dad. Thankfully, my dad's desk was junky, so I'd look for all the biggest stack I could, and I'd slip under it. He always found it somehow. Anyway, I always hated that. When he found it, he'd be like, hey, what are you talking about? So, oh. There was a big paddle under that desk, too, that I always hated. Anyway, so yeah, maybe we start that at a young age, this thing that I'm going to talk. Maybe we should. Anyway, what else do you? I thought it was interesting, a lot of ladies here. I mean, these are the best communicators out there. Should just have one of you teach the class. I know you want to ask something. I can tell. It just looks so chomping at the bit.
So what do we need to
replace
that we need to talk with?
What was that? Oh, what to
what
replace,
do we need
it
to
with?
Replace it with?
I need to listen. Okay. Maybe. Hey, I want to listen to you. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I haven't processed that much. Dennis?
Well, somebody called us both and said, hey, I need some ideas from you about something.
Yeah. That's right.
It's a lot different than
we
need to
that.
Talk about this.
Yeah. Yeah, because what that is that's more of a, like, I want to learn, which is what I share. You know? Approach a conversation like, hey, I want to learn something here.
Something like, also, I'd like to have your perspective.
Yeah. I'm going to give my pastor credit on that. He works with a lot of troubled people, and he has gotten good at that. And I enjoy going to his house and just, or his little shrink shack, as he calls it, sitting down and visiting with him, because it's always usually... He'll approach it that way. Hey, I'll just pick your brain a little bit. And through that, he seems to have a little... After I'm there, I'm like, oh, yeah, you did have an agenda here. But anyway, we're okay. We'll get there. Yeah.
I haven't had much experience with teaching, but... I've noticed, maybe it's uncommon, but the... fifth and sixth graders, friend teachers... And I don't know if it's uncommon, but it seems like that age is very, some are very shy and don't want to discuss anything. And something I appreciated about my dad's classroom that he made, every single one person give an opinion at some point. And there's talkers and there's listeners, but sometimes the listeners need to talk.
That's right. We all have to be put out of our comfort zone a little bit sometimes.
Now, what would you say about getting that age group to talk sometimes? Because sometimes they do.
Like fifth and sixth graders?
Yeah, that. You know,
I don't have trouble with that in my room. They usually have plenty of things to talk about. That's a good question. I don't know if I have an answer for that. How do you get fifth and sixth graders to talk?
Sometimes what you do with what they do say.
Yeah. How do you make what they say?
Anybody.
They may forget what you said, but they won't forget how you made them feel. So maybe that's a bigger thing. How do, when an older person says something, how do we as adults respond to that? Yeah. And I know with some of my stuff, I didn't give specific things like this is what you should do with a board scenario, this is what you should do with a teacher-parent thing, but I think this stuff all applies. You know what I almost did? I almost found like a children's book, like with some principles in about like, or things we try to teach children, because sometimes I'm just like, man, adults, like really? Like I thought we learned this when we were five. And it's just like, we haven't gotten it. You know, I have some things like that too. People are like, man, you haven't learned that yet? Yeah, I haven't learned that yet. But some of this stuff is so basic. Really, it is. It's so basic. And I think we need to be teaching our children. That's why I think we should have a listening curriculum. I mean, I'm sure people pay big bucks for it. Teacher wants a silent. Anything else? Questions or?
I think in our classrooms, we need to cultivate that positive aura around communication, that there's nothing we can't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And as teachers, we're not this. We're not. Our students shouldn't fear coming to talk to us. And even if it's, I had a deal last year where I had communicated something and I found out that I was unclear in my expectations. And it was causing some discussions going home. Parents, you know, were kind of wondering where I was going with this. Mm-hmm. So that's when parents talking to me, but also what really blessed me was I had a couple of the girls at recess came and said, can we talk? And I'm like, sure, we can talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just tried to welcome that in. Even though they felt awkward, I could tell they felt awkward, but they shared what was on their mind. I tried to welcome it, and I thanked them. I hope I made it easy for them to come the next time.
Yeah.
That don't really talk about anything. We can work through anything. And make that a positive experience.
Mm-hmm.
For them.
And I'm gonna guess that probably your body language showed that too. I would have loved. I'm not really well versed in it, but I would love to do a study on body language sometime. I think maybe it's a good little pious Mennonites and Anabaptists. We just think that doesn't really mean anything. Yeah, it's. Oh, maybe I'm not showing good body. No, I just made it awkward. I'm not sure. No, that's not right. I'll go back to my original.
Even sometimes as a class discussion,
mm-hmm.
I've had some very enjoyable learning moments for myself that I thought were going to be tough discussions. But when I opened it up and we actually just talked about it, mm-hmm. just got it on the floor, it turned into a tremendous blessing.
Yeah. It was probably a hard conversation, maybe, that you weren't really looking forward to having.
Yeah. But if we can turn those into positive experiences, mm-hmm. for them.
And I think as teachers, we have a huge role in that. Like you said about students wanting to come talk to us. We're the authority in that section of their life. And if we can say, look, it's okay to talk to adults, even if we're an authority, you know, we're not going to, you know, we can create that to where early in life they learn it's safe to talk to adults. It's unfortunate it hasn't been everybody's situation. Anything else?
I think oftentimes, the students want to talk, and it's just they don't know how to maybe make it happen,
initiate,
whatever.
Yeah.
I think we're wise to try to give the opportunity at times. I know we've had situations where recess, there's a lot of frustration going on, extreme competition, or you know, some hard feelings over things, and we usually wait until the end of the recess or whatever to address it. Or maybe there's a certain game that's continually, and it just, four squares just bad for some of my students. They just
they
get on each other. And,
surely not
and,
Arkansas.
And so we don't necessarily stop playing four square. It's just one of those places where we get practice and patience with each other. Anyway, and then different times I've just had such beautiful conversations come out of, you know, you get in, you just say, hey, you know, tell me what's going on here. Let's just talk about this, you know. Different people are upset at others and
you kind of bring up the big white elephant.
Really,
at least
nice.
I've found it that way.
Good conversations out of that.
Because most times they probably thought about it,
right.
And maybe surprised if you don't say it. I've had that where I say, "Eh, should I say it or should I?" And I bring it up, and they're like, which I teach fifth and sixth graders, so they're, oh, that's not my alarm clock. Anything else? Steve, back to my awkward body position.
Maybe part of listening, the art of developing the art of listening, where I've sometimes had use the expression "we need to talk" or something like that, or I've had it used with me, is not just with teacher and student, but among teachers, mm-hmm. especially if you have big enough school that has a number of teachers, and sometimes their teaching philosophies or methods are different, or they come from different perspectives, and things like that, and especially perhaps as a more of a principal, as you use that. Whether you use that term or not, we're just talking about maybe that's not a good term to use.
Yeah.
And come up with a different way that I like that concept. Hey, I'd like to visit with you about this thing. I'd let it know ahead of time. It's solution oriented. I did have a really big surprise one time when someone told me they want to talk too. They were talking about this student, but it was a family, and that family had troubled children.
Okay.
A troubled child, and I was like, no. What are they disappointed in? What are they worried about? Actually, they were giving my wife and I a trip to Europe. So that really went the other way. Anxiety to joy. Just that one specific thing.
Well, if
you think about that in connection with your ones that you're teaching with, like this is actually a treasure that we have, and spend some time thinking about their perspective and their experience, and how can you bring a conversation up that ties in with that? Like, take the time to think about it, not just your perspective and experience, but think about them and how obviously they do things a certain way. Well, they must mean to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Think it through. That might be one way of that it means to listen a little bit.
Right.
That we're thinking about that, and now how can I approach it? Be clear, but yet diplomatic and friendly and solution oriented. We're not just sharing frustrations. I'm thinking especially among teachers. So, you know, we're adults here. We're not just children steaming off. So we have a solution in mind, and maybe you have a better solution.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, right. But what that does is sort of subtly it's saying, you probably have the answer here, and that makes people feel good, and so they'll talk, right? Yeah. Well, I'm not going to keep you in this boring hot room any longer, so I'm done. Thanks.
Thank you.
Keep listening. Yes, you're welcome.